From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, the last trading day of the month. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Mike Zuzlow is out of the office this afternoon. Then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. You may have been lucky enough to see a very strange cloud formation earlier today. He'll explain what that is, what the weather forecast looks like for Friday night football in the area, and tell us about his discussions with some Argentine and Brazilian farmers that took place last night. Oh, and about the weather forecast as well and what they're concerned about. You'll want to stay with us for the whole of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And if you can stay with us for the whole hour here on our home station, you'll hear our Commodity Week program. If not, it's online right now at willag.org, and many of these stations will carry it over the weekend. Our panelists included Ellen Dearden of Ag Review, Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net, and Brian Stark of The Andersons. September corn at $3.78, up 6.25 today. December futures at 401, 5 higher. And the March at 419, up 5 cents. September soybeans, 8.25 higher at 982. They had an interesting day of the trade. The overnight was about this high, although they managed to slip during the day trade. We'll talk more about that in just a second. Then, of course, bounce back. November beans up 7.5, $10 even the settlement price. And January at 1017, up 8.25. Bean meal at $311.60. They were up $3. Bean oil, 3 cents lower at $43.14 for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the December at $5.51.5, up 2.75 of cent. And the hard red December at $5.65.25, 4.75 cents higher. Live cattle futures at $178.60, up 70 cents. Feeder cattle in the October, $237.75. That's the most traded. $1.75 higher. And lean hogs up a nickel at $82.22.5. Crude oil, $73.62 a barrel, down $2.28. Diesel fuel or heating oil, 3.2 cents lower at $2.28.1 per gallon. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.09.7. That's just about a penny lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average around 41,400 points, around 36 points lower. Now joining us to take a look at the marketplace is Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Hi, Naomi. Thank you for being with us for the day.
I am excited to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, excited because I think there technically were some things that happened in this Friday trade that were important. Can you tell me about them?
Yes. So we'll start with the corn market. So earlier this week, corn futures on daily charts posted a bullish key reversal. We saw some funds exiting short positions. We saw some value buying stepping in. And then prices just kind of gradually creeped a little higher as the week went on, coming up about 15, 16 cents off the lows. But what happened at the end of the week was really exciting if you're a technical trader. Corn futures posted bullish key reversals also on weekly charts. So from a technical standpoint, we have some very significant bottoming action, and it actually times quite well with the harvest seasonal low also. So we saw some of that bottoming action with corn. We saw a bullish key reversal on weekly charts for the Kansas wheat. We also saw a bullish key reversal on weekly charts for soybean meal. So from a technical perspective, things are looking good. Seasonally, corn and Kansas City wheat also have a tendency to actually start to grind a little higher here throughout the months of September and October. So we'll see what other fundamental news starts to percolate in the coming weeks. But from a technical standpoint, we might have seen the harvest low.
Oh, well, farmers will be glad to hear that, especially as most of it's happening before the harvest has begun. Of the three, and I'm going to throw soybeans in here because just because we normally have it there, but of those three primary commodities, which one do you think is the leader at this time to watch most importantly?
Well, I think it's going to be kind of a neck and neck race between corn and wheat, actually. So from a value perspective, corn really on sale. We had wonderful Export news this week, projections for sales. We came in ahead of expectations. We had good ethanol numbers this week. So the demand for corn is there. And I feel like with corn being in that bargain $4 area, end users were just stepping up. It helped that the value of the dollar, of course, had been lower this week as well, too. So that made our exports a little bit more attractive. Now, funds, that's the other thing we got to talk about. So they had been, prior to this week, net short still, those managed money fund traders, 258,000 contracts of corn. So there's room for them to start exiting if this market can continue to work higher. Kind of a little bit more excitement coming your way here. I looked back at the last 10 years of, hey, what did December corn futures do at harvest time? So my parameters were looking at September 1st until November 15th. And during that window, corn futures usually found some kind of a harvest low. 8 out of 10 years, the low came during the month of September. 4 out of those 8 years, the low came the first week of September. The other 4 years, it came in the middle of September. And then the average harvest rally over the past decade has been 51 cents. So that's encouraging. Now, the one thing I will say is that in years where we had larger carryout, such as 2015, 2016, the rally was a little bit more muted, but it was still close to 40 cents. So some encouragement there, some technical buying, funds exiting, value buying happening, exports red hot, ethanol red hot. We have some good things starting to percolate in the corn market. Now, let me be clear, we're not talking $5 corn here, friends. We are not talking about that. But at least it feels like this $4 value level is holding from a fundamental and technical standpoint with that December contract.
Now, a little bit later in this hour, folks are able to stay with us or online right now at willag.org. They can hear Commodity Week. We'll have a discussion about the need to watch bases very closely, especially if it is a quick harvest. What are you telling producers about a 50-cent rally in corn as it relates to basis and how they manage to work through what has to go across the scale and trying to get the most benefit out of the rally?
Oh, that is a huge, important question and topic. So to your point, right, there's going to be all this corn coming to town, potentially a little bit more than normal if it is a faster harvest. So some elevators may say, we're going to widen the basis out because we don't need all of your corn right now. So what the end users are going to have to do, and I should say, excuse me, what the farmers are going to have to do is balance two different things. You're going to have to balance your cash market basis. You're also going to have to consider if you wanted to use any type of reownership contracts to help with any sales you're making. So if you're selling it across the scale at harvest and all of a sudden this market price can go higher, work with your elevator. Some of them do offer the ability to reown through them or with a market advisor. Also, maybe consider if basis right now is potentially attractive in your area and if you can do a basis contract off the December futures. Maybe look into locking in the basis contract now and then with the hopes then that the December board price rallies. And then it'll be up to you to lock in that higher futures price as it goes. But you can manage some of the value that's there. So a lot of moving parts, but manageable. You just got to stay on top of it every day.
1 minute left. Soybeans, I know that's not much time.
So soybeans, a couple things there. The seasonals are not as clear-cut as what corn is. So during the month of September, November soybean futures have a tendency to zigzag sideways, up and down, no clear pattern. So beans aren't as clear cut to me as what it feels like for corn or wheat. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of pullback on bean prices next week and choppy trade. But one thing is very consistent with soybeans is that starting at the end of September, then throughout the month of October, there is a very strong tendency for the soybean price to rally then. But of course, that's after a lot of the beans have already come to town. So if you're going to be making cash sales at harvest, really do consider reownership strategies. With soybeans, that'll take you out into January or March.
Thank you much.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. If you'd like to hear from her again, you can do that on our website. Look for the Closing Market Report at willag.org, willag.org. You can just click and play from the website or search out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications. Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribull is now here to discuss the weather, not only in this nation and North America, but South America and the Southern Hemisphere as well. Hi, Eric. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
I have a question for you, because in my Facebook feed, a friend of mine who farms near Elkhart, my hometown, as childhood hometown, sent some photos and video out on his feed, and it showed, I don't know, this weird cloud formation, and nobody really knew what it was. I take it you looked it up and you do.
Yeah. This is kind of neat this morning. So there's a big front coming our way, right? So there's this cold front that's going to knock these temperatures back this week, and it's going to give us this chance of storms tonight. Well, last night, into the very early hours of this morning, those storms were closer to the Mississippi River. They were in Iowa. And as the sun rose, unfortunately, the lower level atmosphere stabilizes. So the storms kind of died out. But their outflow, you know, the downdraft when it hits the ground and races out ahead of the storm, it lived on and it went right over the, you know, central part of Illinois near Springfield to Lincoln, and now heading over, you know, toward us in the late morning hours. And what you get here is something called an undular bore. So the way to think about it is that you've got this like wave moving in the atmosphere, but it's kind of bouncing up against a very stable layer in the low atmosphere. We call it the temperature inversion, right? So what it does is produces this really cool wave, and sometimes you can get a little shelf cloud on it. So if anybody, you know, saw the radar this morning, you would have noticed these lines, these vertical lines going up and down the screen. Well, maybe they had a little slant to them, northwest to southeast, or no, northeast to southwest. And what that was the outflow of an old decaying thunderstorm. But Todd, as that went through, just understand the sun is now out in full. It's completely re-energized the atmosphere, gotten rid of that inversion, and now what we're talking about later today is a chance for storms as the front tries to get to us. So if you got to see it, it was a roll cloud sitting on an undular board. It was pretty neat.
Oh, how cool. However, you mentioned something there. It's Friday night football.
Yeah.
will be folks in the area get wet tonight?
I think there's a pretty good chance of having some storms, some of which could be stronger. So I'm just going to tell everybody, if you're out and about tonight, just have access to weather data like radar and keep an eye on it, just because there will be scattered storms in the area, and the potential for them is, you know, they could be pretty strong. I mean, we've already seen this week, gosh, about 600 reports of severe weather. Minnesota was hit twice, huge tornadoes in South Dakota. There was hail in Iowa, hail in parts of Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota. We've had a pretty rough week of severe weather. Well, that front is on its way here. We're going to get some of the cooler weather from it this weekend and early next week. But then, Todd, it honestly starts to dry out for us quite a bit. We're going to go probably, I mean, a pretty good stretch of days here with very, very limited chances of rain, maybe no chance of rain. And while it's going to be cool to start that, no risk of frost, but cool to start it, I think we're going to start to warm back up as we get into early September.
All right. Speaking of early September, tell me about the rest of this Labor Day weekend. It'll be nice and...
Yeah,
cool.
Really nice. And I'm happy for that, Todd, because I'm going to take all 3 days and just take a little break from weather forecasting and trying to get my mind reset. But yeah, we've got good weather coming in this weekend. But you know, if you look out there longer term in September, you know, we see some signs of life in La Nina. And you say, well, what does that mean? Well, for late summer, it typically means two things. We do tend to be more mild. So as we transition out of, you know, summer into fall, we tend to get a bit more mild if La Nina dominates. And we tend to be a bit drier. And I'm concerned about that because the Ohio River Valley and the mid and lower Mississippi River Valley are very dry right now. I'm not sure if you've checked lately, but the Mississippi is currently over 5 feet below low stage right now at Memphis. And that is actually lower than it was 1 year ago at this point in late August. And so I don't like seeing that, knowing what that river did last fall and the fall before that with the drier conditions. So I look out there at September and don't see a whole lot of early September chances of rainfall and more mild conditions. It'll probably be great for the crops, but just overall for the soil, I would like to see some more moisture in there. And if we get it, it may have to come from a tropical system, which is a whole other story.
Let's turn your attention to South America. Earlier in the week, on Monday, I spoke with Chad Hart from Iowa State University, agricultural economist there. Of course, Farm Progress Show taking place in Boone this week. That meant that there were farmers from both Argentina and Brazil in. They were talking to him. I know they have been having some discussions with the FarmDoc team yesterday and today, and I believe they met with you last night. What did they want to know about?
Yeah. So I met with a group. We are at Loyola University up in northern, kind of northwest suburbs of Chicago. And I talked to them for 2.5 hours last night, Todd. And while they were very concerned about their weather, it was interesting. Their biggest concern is that their weather is okay, because they know that if they have good weather, they'll have, you know, they'll have an increase in acreage, maybe not as aggressive as the last few years, but there will be more acres that will be coming online. And if they have a good year of weather, that means big production, which would further increase the global stocks. And we know what that could do. So they had a lot of questions about whether or not La Nina was going to have a major influence. And right now, Brazil's still waiting on the monsoon. It's quite early. We don't really typically worry about it until we get to mid, end of September. So they're not expecting much right now. But Argentina's subsurface soil moisture is low. And the other problem in Argentina is that their winter did not get very cold in the north. And they talked to me for about a half hour about one question yesterday, which was about the leaf hopper and the bacteria that it carries, because they're saying that all throughout northern Argentina, corn belt, that area, that they're going to have a major reduction in corn acres because it did not get cold enough this winter to kill off that pest. And the number they gave me, it was they were talking about 20 to 30% reduction in corn acres in Argentina because of the leaf hopper and the bacteria that it's carrying. So that's the first I'd heard of it. But as you and I were talking before this, you've heard some other folks discussing this, right?
Yeah, I have. So all summer long, you've heard variations of this coming out of Argentina, from Rosario, some other places, and the concern that they had about the leaf hoppers and the disease, not as cold weather during the winter months. Reuters just had a report out that suggested 17% of that acreage would not be put into the ground. And I know Arlen Suderman has talked about it with us on the air as well. And I take it you talked about this with Arlen last night.
Yeah, I called him right away. I'm like, Arlen, are you hearing this too? And since I knew I'd talk to you today, I figured I would just wait. But it was first I'd heard about it. But the Argentinians were, boy, were they wanted to discuss it, and they wanted to know why the winter was so mild and what that means going forward. So what they told me was those acres will likely go into soybeans instead of corn. And so that's going to be important, I think, for thinking on the global shift between those two crops as we, you know, get into their cropping year. It's still winter there. They're starting spring here very soon. But I think it's going to be critical to see what happens with acreage shifts in South America and what these pests could possibly do.
Did the soybean producers from Brazil boo when they said that?
You know, it's funny, Todd. Because the Brazilians spoke Portuguese and the Argentinians spoke Spanish, they actually sat on opposite sides of the room. There was a big divide between the two of them. I'm like, is this where Paraguay and Uruguay are? Where are they? They're supposed to be at the meeting. You know? And then... But it was interesting. They also both, so the Brazilians sat on the north side of the room and the Argentinians on the south. So they were really lined up geographically, but they, you could tell there is tension. Like this was a very, you know, the group got along, but you could tell that there is some South American competition. And it's kind of like us in Iowa, like, man, if we could just get Iowa to have a back here. You know, it seemed a bit like that. It was a very good group, very, amazing questions. They really wanted to know what the U.S. crop looks like. And I'm like, well, you're driving through Illinois right now, and this is about as good as it gets.
I have been, and you have too, I'm sure, but I've been in Ukraine and India and visited with farmers from the Eastern Bloc, from France, and from the Western part of Europe, as well as those from South America and here in the United States. and they are all amazingly alike in their concerns.
They are. And they all want problems on someone else's ground, right?
So, that's
so
right.
Yeah, it's no, they are. And it's what I enjoy about those interactions, I'm sure you do, Todd, is we do ask different questions, right? Because of different geographical differences in how things grow. And just to learn more about what productivity looks like elsewhere is fascinating. So I count it as a major advantage that they invite me to speak at their events. And I tend to learn more, I think, than I teach them. So it's very valuable.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And thank you for sharing it with us today. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Online on demand, just click and play our programming right there from our website at willag.org, including this program, the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, which we recorded yesterday afternoon. And many of you can hear the whole of this afternoon on our home station or on many of these stations over the weekend, and again, up on online right now at willag.org. There you'll also find the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, and you can search all three of them out if you'd prefer in your favorite podcast applications. Oh, and on the willag.org website, you'll find information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced, as well as being courtesy of my brother, Tim Gleason. You have a great afternoon. Stay with us if you can. Commodity Week is next.